the Road Disorder podcast. As always, I'm your host, Shivani, and this is the 17th episode of my Meet a Fighter series. So let's dive right into it. So today, I'm going to be addressing the rare condition Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, or commonly known as EDS. These syndromes are a group of hereditary disorders of connective tissue that are varied in the ways they affect the body and in their genetic causes. The main underlying concern is the abnormal structure or function of collagen and certain allied connective tissue proteins. EDS is currently classified into 13 different subtypes. So, how rare is this condition? For EDS overall, 1 in 5,000 people have it. However, some subtypes are extremely rare, with only a couple people having it in the world. EDS is generally characterized by joint hypermobility, joint instability, dislocations, scoliosis, and other joint deformities, along with other structural weaknesses. So, what are some common symptoms of EDS? Some symptoms include joint pain and deformity, muscle pain, nerve pain, soft, velvety-like skin, and finally, fragile skin. So, what is the cause of EDS? The different types of EDS are caused by faults in certain tissues that make connective tissue weaker overall. There are two main known inheritance patterns for Ehlers-Danlos syndromes. These are autosomal dominant and autosomal recessive. So, how is it diagnosed? First, physical examinations are done. Some signs of EDS can be extremely loose joints, fragile or stretchy skin, and a family history of EDS. For further diagnosis, genetic tests on a sample of blood can be ordered. So, what are some related disorders to EDS? Some include Marfan syndrome, familial thoracic aortic aneurysm, and dissection. So, are there any treatment options or therapy options for EDS? Currently, there is no cure for EDS, but treatment can definitely help manage symptoms. Some therapies or treatment options include medication, physical therapy, and surgical or other procedures. Now, I'm so excited to welcome Laura, who is a fighter of EDS. I'm so excited to have you on my podcast today. To start, I was wondering if you could talk about an average day in your life with this rare condition.
Yeah, so I'm so excited to be here. So there really isn't an average day for me. Every day is a little bit different because there are some days where I'm not affected at all and I just go about my day completely like anybody else. There's really no way that you would know that there's anything wrong with me. And then there are other days where I'm in a lot of pain, that I'm having dislocations, or I have a lot of doctor's appointments, or, you know, I'm needing to rely on my medications or mobility aids a lot to be able to get around, or, you know, maybe I can't even get out of bed. So it really varies from day to day.
Mm-hmm. So could you just, like, briefly describe what EDS is and, like, what parts of the body it affects and just, like, basically what it is, a brief overview?
Yeah, so EDS, or Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, is a connective tissue disorder, and connective tissue is everywhere in your body, so EDS affects the entire body. And there are actually 13 different subtypes of EDS that affect different types of collagen and collagen helper proteins. So specifically, I have classical-like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is one of the rarer types. So for me, the issues that I have with the Ehlers-Danlos is I get a lot of joint dislocations. My skin bruises somewhat more easily than other people. It's a little bit more stretchy. I have some GI issues from it. I have a lot of allergies from involvements with that. I have dysautonomia, which causes a whole slew of other issues with things like fainting. But really, it affects the whole body because collagen is everywhere in your body.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then is there anything you feel that other people should know about EDS? This can be like any common misconceptions or just anything you feel that other people should know.
So there are a few things that I think the general public really needs to know. And the first is that there's no one look for a person with EDS, because I think with a condition that is very rare like this, there has been a lot of push for patient advocacy, which has become more popular with the most common subtype, which is the hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos. So you have a lot of people who are getting on social media, and people kind of expect that everyone who has EDS is going to look like that and have symptoms like that. And that can kind of make it hard for medical providers to realize that not everybody is going to have those exact symptoms or look exactly like that, which can make it really hard. And it can also just be really hard for people to recognize that there are other types. There are 12 other types that we know of. There could be even more, because it's a very under-researched condition too. Mm-hmm. So realizing that not everybody who has EDS has joint dislocations, there are a lot of other ways that people are affected.
Mm-hmm. So which, if you're comfortable sharing, which specific subtype of EDS do you have?
I have classical-like Ehlers-Danlos syndrome.
Okay, and then this is one of the ones that are, like, less common, correct?
Yes, I'm quite literally one in a million.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so what you were saying, like, I agree with you that sometimes people, like, tend to generalize a rare condition, like, based on the most common type, but I feel like people should definitely, like, educate themselves and recognize that there are more than one type of, like, many conditions. There can be, like, different subsets, different subtypes, and stuff like that.
Yeah, and I think it's really important for patients, especially, to, when they are advocating and, you know, sharing on social media, if they feel comfortable when they're sharing information, to share about what subtype and what, you know, category they are sharing information about. Mm-hmm. Because it can actually be really harmful if you're sharing advice about, like, how you cope with hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. Some of that advice could actually be really harmful to someone like me who has a different subtype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree, like, definitely, like, specifying what you're talking about so there's no, like, misinformation or potential for, like, incorrect information to get out in the rare disease community.
For sure.
All right, and then, so how are you coping with it?
For me, community is a big part of coping, since there aren't a lot of treatment options available for EDS other than symptom management. Having a community of people who get it, whether that's other people who have EDS, even if it's a different subtype, or other people who have a rare disease in general, or just other people with chronic illness. Having people who understand what my life is like is really helpful, because it's just someone else that I can text and say, like, oh my God, I had the worst doctor's appointment today. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to judge me for that. They're going to be like, oh my God, I totally get it. Like, mm-hmm. Do you want to watch a show to distract yourself? Mm-hmm. And not criticize me or judge me for not being grateful for the opportunity to see this specialist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's really great to have a really great support system, especially people who understand what you're going through and they've experienced it as well. So leading off of your other question, leading off of something you said, you mentioned how EDS involves symptom management. Could you, like, briefly describe some of, like, the symptoms and what this, like, management techniques look like?
Yeah, so, like, if I have a joint dislocation, I obviously will take steps to address that. So I've been trained on how to, for the most part, get my joints back into place myself if it's not urgently needing to be seen in a medical setting, so that I'm not constantly in the hospital getting my joints put back into place, because that would be incredibly inconvenient and expensive since it happens so often. So my bedroom kind of looks like a small hospital at this point, because I have so many braces and splints. So I kind of know how to triage my own injuries at this point, and I can assess when it's something I can handle on my own and when it's something that I need to seek help for. So it's a lot of just assessing how I'm feeling each day and seeing, you know, is this a day that I need to put on a splint or an ACE bandage, or should I put on some kinesiology tape to try to, like, just remind myself that this joint is a little bit loose today? Is it a day that I might need crutches? Mm-hmm. Just different things like that. I have different medications that I take to treat different side effects and symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Got it. All right. And then, so have you ever encountered a major struggle with EDS, and how were you able to overcome it?
For me, a big struggle was I was diagnosed during my first year of undergraduate studies. So I had to sort of adjust to this life-changing diagnosis while also adjusting to being away from home for the first time, taking college-level classes, really being in charge of my own medical decisions for the first time. So it was really like I was thrown into this whole other world, and I really had to learn how to navigate college while also having to learn how to navigate the healthcare system. Mm-hmm. And having to do both in a way that, like, I truly didn't fit in the true college experience, because I wasn't able to do the typical social things. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the college student who was able to go to parties and, you know, go on trips and do the things that my friends were doing, because I was also having to, you know, go for hospital stays or tests, or, oh, you know, my leg is in a cast, so I can't go with you to this sports game. Mm-hmm. But I was also like, oh, I can't go to this doctor's appointment because I have a midterm at that time. So I was trying to find a balance between the two, and it really took finding providers who valued my education and knew that that was a priority for me, and finding professors who understood that my healthcare was also a priority. Mm-hmm. And basically trying to find a balance between the two and saying, hey, both of these things need to be my number one priority, so we need to find a way that I can have two number one priorities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand it's really about finding that balance, and I feel like the difficult part is really adjusting at first, but then you kind of, like, get used to it, get into a routine. So, yeah.
And I mean, I had to make sacrifices. You know, I didn't do a minor. I took an extra year of undergrad so that I had time to go to doctor's appointments. I didn't do as many extracurriculars, mm-hmm. but I still was able to have a college experience. I was able to do things like be in the choir and still work and still take classes that I loved. And I went to a school that was right by the hospital where I received care, so that I didn't have to worry about travel. Mm-hmm.
All right. So I know you mentioned that you're an advocate before. So what are some, like, initiatives that you take to raise awareness for EDS?
So a big thing for me is just getting people talking about EDS, because it is something that people don't always understand, or when they do have an understanding of it, it's either a lot of misinformation or at a very bare bone level, and they don't really understand the severity of it and how important it is to actually diagnose and treat. Like, a lot of people are like, oh yeah, that's something that makes you, like, extra bendy, like, why is that really a problem, like, go take some dance classes or take some yoga classes. Like, why is that a problem? Mm-hmm. Because they don't understand that you can actually do joint damage, and that you might have, like, organ damage from it, or that some people have cardiac problems and could die of early cardiac death if they have that subtype. So for me, that's something that I'm really passionate about, as well as encouraging earlier diagnosis in children. Because for me, by the time I was diagnosed, I had already done a lot of joint damage and already have a lot of chronic joint pain from dislocating so many times as a child. Mm-hmm. Whereas had I been diagnosed at a younger age, had my pediatrician seen these red flags, I probably could have saved myself from getting injured so many times, because I did. I was a dancer for my whole life. And I was constantly injuring myself in dance because I was pushing my joints so hard because I was able to. I had the flexibility. So a project that I'm currently working on is creating a little one pager that could be given to pediatricians of basically saying like, hey, here are the red flags that you should be looking out for in your patients of when you should consider Ehlers-Danlos syndrome as a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you a part of any specific rare organizations or advocacy organizations or anything like that, or do you just spread awareness through your own Instagram page and just making sure to educate everyone around you?
So a combination of all of those, actually. So I was a member of the first ever YAR Leadership Academy through the Every Life Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a YAR member, which is the Young Adult Representatives of the Rare Disease Legislative Advocates. So through that, I've had the opportunity to meet with legislators and about rare disease policy, which is really amazing. It's actually currently Rare Disease Week on Capitol Hill, which is happening virtually this year due to COVID, but we're actually, meeting with state representatives and sharing our stories and encouraging them to support current legislation about access to treatment and just the importance of remembering rare patients when they're voting on different bills.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a really amazing opportunity. And through that Leadership Academy, I was actually trained on how to do this type of advocacy, how to get up at meetings and share my story, how to put together a presentation and speak. And through that, I was actually able to speak earlier this summer at the Ehlers-Danlos Society Virtual Summer Conference as one of their patient voices and share my story with over 500 people from around the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. Congratulations on that speaking opportunity, by the way. That's amazing.
Thank you.
It's great that you're taking initiative and really sharing your story, because I believe that can really have a huge impact. Rather than someone just hearing about stats and facts about a rare disease, it's really great that you were able to come in person, a person like you with EDS, you were able to share your story.
Yeah, it's so helpful to see a face and the humanity behind these conditions that people have never heard of before. Mm-hmm. Rather than just hearing rare disease.
Yeah. All right. And then I was just wondering if there are any resources you would like to share that you have come across to help other people with EDS or just rare diseases in general.
Yeah, so for people who have EDS, I would definitely recommend checking out the EDS Society. They have some absolutely amazing resources and support groups available. But for folks just with rare disease, I've already mentioned YAR is an amazing resource for those interested in getting involved in advocacy. And obviously for those who are not young adults, just the Rare Disease Legislative Advocates are awesome as well. And then again, for young people with rare disease, there's an organization called Next Step based out of Cambridge, Massachusetts, and they offer some amazing free programming for young people with rare genetic disorders, as well as young people with cancer and HIV. Mm-hmm. And they were sort of the first organization that I found after I was diagnosed and the first community that I found. And I'm still a part of that community, and I absolutely love them and would highly recommend them to anyone looking for a community.
All right. Thank you for sharing all those resources. All right. And then just to kind of end off now, I was wondering if there was anything else you would like to share with my podcast audience today. My audience is mainly rare disease patients, rare disease advocates. Just anything else you would like to share? It can be anything general or specific.
I mean, if anyone wants to connect further, I'm on Instagram. My handle is Sharing My Stripes. I'd love to hear from you and connect further. if you have any questions or if you want to talk further about anything that I shared. And that's pretty much it. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today.
Mm-hmm. All right, so just to close out now, I would like to thank you so much, Laura, for joining me on my podcast today and sharing your story and helping me spread awareness for EDS. So thank you.